The following program contains the opinions of the host, guests, and call-in participants. These do not necessarily represent the views of this show's distributors or sponsors. This program may contain obscene, profane, or otherwise objectionable language. Viewer discretion is advised. Yes, coming to your cordless, everybody, up to the satellite and down to your phone. It's Thursday night, 18th, 2024. It's 11 p.m. on the East Coast of the United States, 8 p.m. on the West Coast, 2 o'clock in the afternoon at the Sydney Opera House, and 10 p.m. Central Daylight Time here in Ilhan Omar's district in Northeast Minneapolis. I am Jim Peters, and welcome to another edition of Jim Peters Tonight. If you're keeping the score at home, it's episode number 108. Oh, yeah. We got it going on, man. We do. Yeah. Got a lot of stuff going on. It's good. All right. So what do we got tonight? We got Lee Richardson is joining us. She's the founder of the Brain Performance Center in Dallas. And she's a neurotherapist and a psychologist. And she started the Brain Performance Center. And it's about the performance of your brain. And yeah, it is. So we're going to talk to her about a whole bunch of stuff. We're talking to her about obesity. We're talking to her about loneliness. We're talking to her about how loneliness, how bad diets end up making people depressed. We're talking about the soul, all sorts of stuff. So you want to stay tuned for that. So that's tonight. We don't do shows on Fridays. Next Monday, we're not doing a show either. We're taking the Monday off. Here's the reason. I got a good reason. We are putting in a new internet system, fiber optics, in our studio. Now, okay, they're going to be done by the time we would go live, but still, I want to test some stuff. I don't want to risk it or whatever. You know, it could be just a mess. So we're taking Monday off for that reason. Tuesday, we had Ed Morrissey. He's the managing editor of HotAir.com. He's going to come on. He's particularly astute when it comes to matters of foreign policy. Looking forward to talking to him. In the last appearance he made here, he made a very, very cogent argument for why we should support Ukraine. The best one I've ever heard, actually. And so we're going to ask him about that and the Israeli war, all sorts of stuff. He writes for Hot Air. He's the managing editor there. We have a lot of people from Hot Air on. We have a lot of people from Salem Media on. They're Salem Media property. We have a lot of people from the Epoch Times on. We have that. We've got kind of connections with those two places. So, any rate, and also Jazz Shaw and David Strom, come on, I'm going to talk about an article David wrote that I actually just ran into about a half an hour before we went on the air here. I was just scanning through some stuff, and Strom has a really good article up explaining some stuff. So we're talking about stuff. Now, Wednesday, we have Bruce Soheim on. He's the author of the book We Are the Aliens. He's written, I think, about 9 books. He is a college professor by profession. Also, he works for the military. I think he's active reserve, if I'm correct. We'll find out. We'll talk to him about that. And also, he's worked as a defense contractor. Now, he says, and the thing is, those of you who think this is nuts are going to have to start coming more and more, get used to this. He says he's been contacted by extraterrestrials, too. Now, we had some, who was a Bruce Rapalano was on a couple weeks ago. He says he's talking to ETs. Kathleen Martin is coming on Thursday next week. She says she's talked to the ETs. Yeah, as a matter of fact, if you're into the UFO stuff, man, next Wednesday or Thursday is like, that's gold for you. So so Solheim's coming on, and he says he's talked to the ETs. That's on Wednesday. On Thursday, Kathleen Martin is coming on. She is the niece of Betty Hill, of Betty and Barney Hill fame, the first basically documented alien abduction in American history, 1961, and also a lot of circumstantial evidence. And we'll talk to her about a story, something that happened there, which Stanton Friedman, who was arguably the best UFO researcher in the world, until he passed away a few years ago, he said was a smoking gun of ufology. He said there's something that happened to the Hills that basically, especially Betty, that a lot of people think, including me, proves that the abduction phenomena is real. And so we're going to talk to them. But I've been reading Kathleen's latest book, which is called Forbidden Knowledge. And in that book, people are starting to spill this shit now. And you could say it's shit. I mean, that's obviously you can draw your own conclusion. But more and more people, in this book, she said she's been talking to the aliens. And she never wrote this book previously because she was 16 when Betty Hill was abducted. And she knows the story. I mean, she literally talked to her aunt the day after it happened. And she decided, based on that experience, to basically become a professional UFO researcher. She's devoted her life to that. And she said she did not write this book until recently, 2 years ago. Matter of fact, it was updated last year. It came out in 2022, and then she added more material in 2023. She didn't write it because she thought she would not be taken seriously by the UFO community. It's interesting how that works. We had a Bigfoot panel on here, a couple months ago. And Larry Newman, a good friend of mine, and Larry is a Bigfoot investigator for the Bigfoot Field Research Organization. And we should point out, okay, they asked Larry to do that because Larry is a former police investigator. So he knows investigative procedure. And he said when he started with them, he did not believe in Bigfoot. He said, well, I'm going to do this, whatever. I will do in these investigations. I will do them cold and hard. But I don't really think there's anything to this. And after working with them, especially, he said he watched a family of Bigfoot through an infrared camera in the middle of the night in the forest of the Ozarks for an hour. And he said he was sold on that. That convinced him that Bigfoot is real. Anyway, it's the same thing with the UFO. Oh no. What I was going to point out is that we have this Bigfoot panel on, and that the accepted thing in the Bigfoot community is that Bigfoot is an undiscovered primate. Now, I don't know if you know this. They didn't discover or confirm the existence of gorillas until 1855. The giant squid was rumored for 2,000 years before they finally caught one in 2006. People say, how do these things get through? Well, it happens. Seriously, 2,000 years they were talking about the giant squid, and they didn't catch one until 20 years ago. So, these things do get to slip through the cracks. And the fact that Bigfoot is an undiscovered primate is very, very credible and plausible. But there's a lot of people in the Bigfoot community, if you want to call the community, and maybe they're outliers. Stan Gordon, one of the most prominent Bigfoot investigators in the world right now, and he's also a UFO investigator. And the amazing thing about him is that he got started on this, like Kathleen, because he lived in Kecksburg, Pennsylvania. He was there in 1965 when that UFO crashed. And I won't get into the details there, but the government will tell you it's a meteor. The whole town knew that was bullshit. I mean, there's 20 people in the town that actually saw the thing. They don't bring out 1,200 uniformed military people to take a meteor home. I mean, it was such a blatant lie. But he lived there, and that started him on his quest. He became a professional UFO researcher and subsequently got into Bigfoot. And he says, and a lot of people, the Bigfoot community is torn about this, that Bigfoot is actually maybe some sort of paranormal, interdimensional creature, because there's people who have confronted Bigfoot. A lot of people said they've just seen Bigfoot disappear right before their eyes. There are people that say they've communicated telepathically with Bigfoot. And you have to understand, the weird thing about Bigfoot is that, if you watch any of the shows, Exhibition Bigfoot or whatever the hell they are on the Travel Channel, you ever noticed no one, and it's really true, I joke about this, but it's really true, no one who goes out looking for Bigfoot ever actually finds Bigfoot. You know who finds Bigfoot? The guy who took his family out for a picnic in the national park. Those are the people that see Bigfoot. If you go out looking for Bigfoot, you'll never find Bigfoot. So the thing is, these people, all of these not all of them. The vast, vast majority of these reports come from people who are not out looking for Bigfoot. They were just in the forest, whatever it was, and there Bigfoot shows up. And some of these people say Bigfoot has communicated with them telepathically. And there's a lot of people in the Bigfoot community that thinks that's nuts. So, you know, you got a schism there, and then you got the UFO people who say, okay, the UFOs are real. And we pretty much know the UFOs are real because the government now says they're real. American, for part three of the show tonight, I'm going to talk to them about that. There's a new report out by the government about the UFOs. And I'll give you the lowdown right now. It's rife with errors. It's apparently it's written embarrassingly bad. But one thing that the report says is that UFO activity above military bases in the United States is increasing. So the government is acknowledging this now. Okay, so now you have people like Kathleen and Bruce Solheim are coming forward and saying, well, no, the ETs are actually talking to me. They're communicating with me. So you can do that with what you will, but Kathleen decided she didn't want to keep it a secret anymore. And the interesting thing, we're going to ask her about this too, and in her book, there's not a lot of coverage of this, so I'm really curious about this. She says that after her aunt was abducted, and you have to understand, Betty and Barney, you know, they were a married couple. They handled this two very different ways. Barney kind of cracked up. He had a very hard time handling it. I guess he finally came to terms with it later in life. He finally did and was able to kind of like go on with his life. But in the short term, in 1961, after this happened, he had a very hard time. She was kind of in wonder of the whole thing. She found it kind of fascinating. And also, they did have, this is not really reported, because the thing about their experience that's really groundbreaking is that they were put under hypnosis. They're the first people ever hypnotized to obtain their memories. But they did remember some of it consciously, and that isn't talked about very much. So they knew even when they got home that something really, really weird had happened to them. They went to the psychologist because they couldn't deal with it. The reason I brought that up is because shortly after that, after their experience, Kathleen says the government recruited her aunt, Betty Hill, to work on an experiment to actually try to contact the extraterrestrials. They had several people around the country who were working with the government, with the military, on this experiment to contact the ETs. And apparently they succeeded. So, you know, I don't know. You know, it's like the thing is, the reason I like to put this stuff out there is because these are very credible people. And, they, you know, I mean, even Kathleen says the reason she didn't write this book is she knew it would ruin her reputation. And she thought, well, the time was right that maybe I can grin and bear it. And it does. It ruins people's reputation. There's no doubt about that. You know, you can talk about Bigfoot being in the forest, but when you start talking about Bigfoot disappearing and telepathically communicating, then people think you're nuts, you know. Now, and I have to say, on the panel we had, on the book Bigfoot panel, nobody on the panel bought that, including Larry. Larry thinks Bigfoot is simply an undiscovered primate that we've never. There is a report that's a rumor that's been flying around for years that during a major California wildfire, that the U.S. government actually rescued a Bigfoot from the fire, and that they hauled it away somewhere. There are people who say they actually saw that happen. So I don't know. You know, it's like, and then the question is, well, if the government has a Bigfoot, why wouldn't they publicize it? But there's a really, really good reason, and that is, people brought this up, Bigfoot would be an endangered species, and if you categorized it as such, it would basically halt all logging in the United States. You wouldn't be able to log anywhere, basically, because of Bigfoot. So there's the government, you could say the government has a vested interest in keeping the secret. There you go. So we got, we're off on Monday, Ed Morrissey on Tuesday, Bruce Solheim on Wednesday, Kathleen Martin on Thursday. That's next week. Now, we finally, the last two nights, we've been off the air on Blog Talk Radio. We have not been able to connect. It's working tonight. So you can, these numbers here at the bottom of the screen, this one, the audio, you can call in 563-999-3435. Love to talk to you. Our interview with Lee Richardson was pre-recorded this afternoon, so we won't be taking any calls during it. But before or after, call in. Great. Terrific. Call in. We got a text from somebody last night. Matter of fact, it happened after we were off the air that said somebody really wants to talk to me about the alien thing. That's fine. Call up. Also, you can call up with your webcam right here, jimandnight.com/call. I know this is unusual. People aren't used to this. You go to a browser web page to connect your camera. You click the big blue button at the top of the page, and that will connect your camera to our virtual studio and put you in the queue. And then we'll put you on. Now, I'm master of the obvious shit. If you call up with your camera, your picture's going to be on the screen. And you're going to be on the show. Got it? Okay. I mean, I encourage you to do that, but a lot of people don't want to do that. And finally, you can text us right here at this number, 408-458-5088. We get the text in real time. Like I said, we got a few last night. Wonderful. Last night, our guest was Jeff Meyer. It was supposed to be the dynamic duo, but Jennifer Oliver O'Connell, she put the wrong date in her calendar. That happens. It's like we have people coming in out here all the time, so it should happen. It just happens. Okay, so what happened today? Let me tell you what happened today. Let me get my outline going. I'm thinking about, I do not use a teleprompter, and I don't read anything on this show. Maybe you figure this out. This is not a radio show. This is a video television program, however you want to call it, internet video, whatever. And we broadcast the audio on Blog Talk Radio live in real time. We do. You go to Blog Talk Radio right now in the live directory. We're up there. And you can listen, but it's primarily a video show. And those of you who are listening on Blog Talk Radio, yes, I reference pictures sometimes because we put pictures on the screen, and you can't see them. But my point is, I've been thinking about getting a teleprompter, even though I don't actually read anything, just to put the outline up so I don't have to constantly look down. So I'm talking to myself. So anyway, let me tell you what happened today. What happened is that it's 12 jurors for the Trump bullshit trial in New York City. And that's not news. Matter of fact, that's my point here. I'm watching Nora O'Donnell on the CBS 3 News at 5:30 Central Time. And she starts with breaking news, they have jurors for the Trump trial. That's not breaking news. You stupid people. It's like, and then you wonder why does no one take the mainstream media seriously? Well, that's not breaking news. It's a trial. They're going to have jurors, just because they finished, come on. It just really, it pisses the shit out of me. I get really angry about this. They're putting up these breaking news banners all the time. Fuck you. It's not breaking news. It's just plain news, Can't we save the breaking news stuff for truly important shit? It just really bothers me, Now, for those of you who don't watch these shows, and, if you get online on the Twitter machine, people say, well, no one watches these shows. That's not actually true. Between the three major network newscasts every night, they're drawing between the three of them about 20 million people. Matter of fact, for each one of those shows on those networks, those newscasts are still some of the highest rated shows on those networks. I actually just checked a few days ago because I was really, here's what I was checking. I was really curious. All right. And my wife says this dates me, but I'm going to tell you, I'm a big fan of Let's Make a Deal. It's on here in Minneapolis at 2:00 in the afternoon on the CBS affiliate. It's a CBS show. It's a CBS network show. And I'm thinking, does this 1 hour game show, Wayne Brady's very entertaining. Tiffany Coyne's very hot. I like watching this. They're goofing around with the stupid games and stuff. It's like, okay, I find it very diversionary. It's wonderful. You don't have to think about politics or UFOs for a fucking hour. Although I don't. So I'm wondering, what are the ratings for this thing? What are they? Well, it turns out, and I kind of made a guess on this. It turned out I was right. Let's Make a Deal draws more people every day than the Late Show with Stephen Colbert does at night, than their late night talk show does. It's about 2 million even for Colbert, 2.4 million for the game show. They get more people watching the game show than Colbert. And that doesn't surprise me. And Colbert's the highest rated one. You have to understand that. He's drawing about 2 million people a night. Jimmy Fallon and Jimmy Kimmel are each drawing about 1.5 million, roughly. And Gutfeld's drawing 2 million people a night. He's basically tying with Colbert. But the thing is, he's on cable television. You have to pay to see it. So it's actually that's pretty amazing, you know. Gutfeld is, I think, the number 5 rated show on all cable television. And I'm not talking about cable news. I'm talking about cable television, like including ESPN and History and the stupid Hallmark movies and all that stuff. You know, I think it's the number 5 rated show, I think. But I'm tired of them putting this breaking news banner up when there's no fucking breaking news. You know, now Trump is stuck in the courtroom. So far that he's making it work for him. I mean, he went to this bodega in Harlem a couple of days ago. People went nuts. I mean, it was the crowd who showed up, it was unbelievable. Hundreds of people showed up. Now, I'm going to be perfectly straight here with you. That was an arranged visit. He told them ahead of time he was coming. So, okay, fine. But still, I mean, it was unbelievable. And then, of course, Biden went to a gas station yesterday, and nobody's there. Now, I'm laughing about this, but I've looked at this. This is one of the reasons I think the 2020 election was rigged. I've said this before. I don't have any proof, but to me, this is solid evidence. And that is, he got 81 million votes, supposedly, and yet with one exception, one single exception, 5 days before the 2020 election in Pennsylvania, where he drew 900 people, without one exception, he didn't draw more than 200 people to any campaign event during the entire campaign. Now, they will say, oh, you know, it was COVID. Yeah. Well, Trump was drawing an average of 20,000 people at every campaign event. 200 versus 20,000. Do I have to do the math for you? What is, I think 200 is 1% of 20,000, I think, off the top of my head. You know, and so you're going to tell me this guy won? Now, I've been in the entertainment business my entire life. I understand these figures, and especially people who are in the campaign business, they will tell you that especially when you get close to the election, like within a weekend, the crowd sizes really seem to indicate who's going to win. And the thing is, there was never any question. This also happened in the 2016 campaign. Trump was drawing way bigger crowds than Hillary Clinton, but Clinton at least was drawing an acceptable number of people. She was drawing about 1,500 people every campaign event. He was drawing about 10,000. Okay, so he was besting her. But still, she was drawing 1,500 people. Okay, you know, that's acceptable. That's not, you know, it's not 10,000, but, you know, you're drawing a crowd. And it's also way, way more than 200. And I'm being generous here. There were so few people at most of these campaign events for Biden that the press couldn't tell who was the other press, who was the campaign people, and who was the public. They couldn't tell. That's how few people were there. And so this happened again, you know, so Tuesday, Trump goes to a bodega, draws hundreds of people, hundreds. They're chanting. They're singing the national anthem. It's just pandemonium. And yesterday, Biden decides he's in Philadelphia. He's going to go to a gas station, convenience store, and there's about a dozen people there. And also, if you've seen the video, nobody really wants to talk to him. I mean, it's just painfully embarrassing, the comparison, you know. But I still want to point out, they still might win, you know, between ballot harvesting and all that shit, who knows, you know. Although I'm going to make a prediction. I think I made it with John Zorro on Monday night. Everyone's saying that at some point there's going to be a black swan event. That is some major event that no one's anticipating that's going to happen. And that will probably happen, but I'm going to say two things about that. I don't think it'll be manufactured. I think it'll be genuine, whatever it is. And it will be to the detriment of Biden, not to the detriment of Trump. And I have the feeling it's going to involve the Middle East war situation. That's my feeling. I don't know. I have feelings. You know, I'm like a little girl. You know, it's like not easy to be me, you know. So anyway, Nora Godano, bless her heart, you know, had to put up the fucking breaking news banner because they got jurors for a trial. That's great. All right, I was telling you about our friends at HotAir.com, David Strom. He's the associate editor. Ed Morrissey's coming on Tuesday. David Strom is an associate editor of Hot Air, and he comes on here regularly. So he wrote an article that I don't know when it was posted. I check in there several times a day because him and Jen Shaw write so much good stuff. But I only saw it a half hour before we went live here. And the title is simply Good, Google Fired Them. Now, if you know about this, there's a bunch of social justice warriors that work at Google that basically took over. They did a sit-in demonstration at the main administrative offices of Google. I think that's in Mountain View, if I'm right, California, where they went to the head of their, it wasn't the actual like, CEO of Google, but they went to the head of their division head, president, CEO, the president of their division, and they occupied his office. Well, Google, I guess, has gotten tired of this. Up to now, they have tolerated this shit, but not anymore. They didn't tolerate this. They fired all those people. Yeah, good for them. And of course, there's a reason. The reason is because, and they even said it in the statement, there's a difference between demonstrating and disrupting business. And there is. This is the problem. You know, you want to go out and stop traffic, you should be in jail. You know, there's no problem. You want to, you know, if you want to protest, go to a park, hold up signs, do a rally, whatever it is, that's fine. If you're going to block the freeway, you should be in jail. That's not protesting. That's disruption. That's illegal. And these kids, all right, so here's another thing that happened. So Elon, I told you, I announced this at the top of the show. We're sitting in Elon Omar's congressional district, quite possibly the most batshit crazy congressman on the planet in our country, right? Okay, she's nuts. Not only that, there's been a rumor going around for years. This isn't just me. Even the local newspaper, the Star Tribune, has reported the fact that she pays people to vote for her. So I'm not saying that. I just want to point out allegedly, but they've said it. $200. And here's my advice to them. And this is what I said in last November. Take the money and then vote for somebody else. Excuse me. Hold on. Anyway, you probably heard that there's been these demonstrations at Columbia University. And these demonstrators, although they're all university students, aren't necessarily just from Columbia. So there's a bunch there from Barnard College. And one of those people was Ilhan Omar's daughter. And so she got arrested for protesting at Columbia. Columbia's starting not to put up with crap anymore either. But the really funny part is, I don't know. I find this humorous because I'm a 12-year-old boy. I'm a girl and a boy. What does that make me? I don't know. Should I be on some girls' basketball team or something? I don't know. So Elon complained about the fact that during one of these demonstrations, somebody had released a toxic substance into the crowd. That toxic substance turned out to be what's called wet farts or liquid ass. And it was released by the protesters themselves. Now, I didn't know this, but you can get a can of this stuff. Apparently, it's two different versions of the same thing. You know, and you can spray it, and it's very obnoxious. And apparently, like, it will make you gay and maybe even throw up. It smells extremely bad. There was nothing nefarious there. The terrorists, I'll call them terrorists, sure. The student terrorists did that themselves. She's complaining about it. I just find that funny. Oh my God. I mean, I don't know if there's people in town here who really, really want to get rid of this woman. I mean, there's an apocryphal story, but apparently it's true. So I'm going to say allegedly, but I've heard that this is actually true, that after she was elected to Congress, but before she went, a bunch of clergy people in town here got together with her and said, look, you got to cut out this anti-Semitic Jewish hate shit right now. They said, you can't do this on the national stage. Well, it turned out they were wrong. You can, and she did, and she's getting away with it. It's like, yeah, the woman hates Jews. I don't know. Yeah, I can't put in any more plain than that, you know? Oh, man. So anyway, Jeff Meyer was on last night alone. He was supposed to be on with Jennifer Oliver O'Connell, but he was on alone. We had a great discussion. fantastic guy. He's just a full of really interesting ideas and thoughts in his head. And so he was talking. I want to reference this. It was a passing thought on his part, but still, I was going to go back to it during our conversation. I never had a chance to do that. So I kind of wanted to address it now because I think it's pertinent to some stuff that's going on in the country. We were talking about the fact that president, let's say Trump gets in office, could you fire like 90% of the people who work at the Department of Education? And I asked that not as a rhetorical question. I was actually curious and just said, well, look, Reagan fired all their traffic controllers. And so those of you who don't know what he's talking about, this is Reagan became president in January 1981. And I think this happened about 3-4 months into his term, if I'm right. It was brand new. So the air traffic controllers who work for the Federal Aviation Agency, which is a department of the government, these are all the air traffic controllers all across the United States, they decided to go on strike. Problem. According to their contract at that time, and I think this is still true, but I knew then it was, their contract specifically said they couldn't strike. And their stance basically was, well, what are you going to do about it? Fire us? You know, you need us. You need us to land these airplanes. You can't get rid of us. And Reagan basically said, fuck you, and he did. He fired all of them. Now, I want to be specific here on what happened. Reagan announced, he got up and said, he announced that he gave them, I think it was 72 hours to come back to work. He said, anybody who comes back to work gets to keep their job. And they didn't believe him. They thought, there's no way in hell he's going to fire all of us. No way. Well, about 5% of the striking workers went back. Now, and not only that, those people that went back, not only did they keep their jobs, they almost all got promotions. Because what happened in the aftermath is, of course, now you have an entire air traffic control system that's unmanned. And at that time, in 1981, it was not computerized. Because we didn't have computers were shit in 1981. So it was all done manually still. So they sent in a bunch of military air traffic controllers, and the people who actually came back to the jobs and busted the picket lines actually got promotions. So they became the supervisors, and no planes crashed. And I don't know how many people this was. He fired thousands of people simultaneously. And Jeff's right. So the president has the possibility, has the ability to do this. And my thinking, talking with Jeff last night, is that, well, you know, the president is the chief executive of the United States, and part of the executive function is hiring and firing people. Like, here's the example. This is the example we're talking about the Department of Education, and that is, I don't think the president can defund the department. Funding is set by Congress, but there's two things. He can determine how many people work there. So, like, if there's 10,000 people in the department, he can bring it down to 50. He could do that. And also, secondly, even I don't think he's obligated to spend all the money that's allocated. You know, I mean, you're given a budget. That's a maximum. But I don't think there's any minimum. You know, there's nothing that says you have to spend that money. So, you know, there's a lot of people saying, how can Donald Trump defeat or bust the deep state? And that's the way you do it. You'd have to literally, you folks realize that, you know, the Biden administration is counting all these incredible employment numbers. Now, I have to admit, at this point, I don't even buy the numbers coming out of the Bureau of Labor Statistics or the General Accounting Office. I think they're lying now, too. I do. I think the whole thing's become corrupt. But that said, a lot of these numbers are technically true. But here's the thing. So all these employment numbers you heard, all these jobs have been created, and this has been consistent from what I understand over the last 3 years. A quarter of these jobs, 25% of them, are with the federal government. They're federal government jobs. They are ballooning the size of the federal government to massive amounts. So I have no idea how many people work for, like, just as an example, the Department of Education. I don't know. But are those people necessary? My guess is 95% of them are. Well, first of all, that department I used an example, and Jeff and I were talking about, because a lot of people think it shouldn't even exist. And I'm one of those people. I agree. It's a, the education should be handled and is handled on the state level. And the Department of Education was created to try to shoehorn all those 50 state departments of education into doing the same thing. Well, bullshit. You know, why? Why do we have to do this? You know, I don't talk about abortion on the show very much. So I'll be perfectly blunt. I'm very torn about it. I suppose at the end of the day, I'm pro-choice because I have a very hard time with the government telling anybody what to do with something going on inside their body. But that said, abortion is murder. I mean, that's where I'm torn, you know. But the thing is, so what's happened now, you know, they said, well, they rescinded Roe versus Wade. Well, yeah, they did. So now it's a state issue. And if I'm right, 26 states, I think it is, allowed for some sort of abortion and 24 don't. And that's probably the way it should be, you know. And people say, what if you're in a state and you need an abortion and you can't have one? Well, go to a different state. And then what if you're poor? Well, you know, I don't know. I can't run the world so that to accommodate every single thing, and nobody can, you know. So I know that there's people think that's very callous of me, but you just can't. I mean, at some point, you know, you have to draw a line somewhere. So I think it's what's happened is a good thing, and only that the way it should be. I don't think there should be any federal abortion law. I just don't. You know, people, different places should do it for different reasons, and you know, if you know, move there. You know what can I tell you? So anyway, I want to point out that discussion, Jeff and I, because it occurred to me when we were doing it that a lot of people, when he talked about the air traffic controls, probably didn't even know what we were talking about. I mean, it was over 40 years ago. So, and of course, that just shows how old I am. I'm very old. Okay, this is not too, this is something that passes through the cracks of the mainstream media that you won't hear. So, you know, you probably heard, if you heard Biden's State of the Union in February, you know, this, it was, well, let's not talk about his delivery, but, you know, he said that he wants to build a pier on the Gaza coast to get humanitarian aid into Gaza. And he said that he was going to send the U.S. Army over there to do it. Now, somebody pointed out, you know, he said, well, no, we're going to have no troops on the ground, but don't you have to put troops on the ground to build a pier? Yeah, okay. But even besides that, here's the thing. The Army and the Navy, now the Army has boats too. So the Army has its own Navy, and then there's the Navy, right? Okay. They have tried to get boats over there to do this, can't do it. It turns out that some of our boats are so badly equipped and have been in mothballs, have been basically sidelined for so long, they basically aren't working. Like, we sent one boat over there, it started on fire on the way there, had to turn around and come back. So Beige Wellburn, Hot Air, wrote about this today, about the fact that they have not been able to get a boat successfully over to Gaza to do this. Now, what does that say about our military? What the hell? What is that? We have boats that are so decrepit they can't even, like, sail. And apparently this has been a complete comedy of errors. Everything they've tried has basically gone to shit, you know, which is kind of sounds like Biden's entire term. But, what the hell? Where's all our money going? What is the budget of the Defense Department? Like, something like $4 trillion or something like that? I mean, God's sakes. I don't, this is the part, you know, and then I see this thing that some contractor, and apparently they paid for it, charged the Department of Defense $90,000 for a bag. I'm talking about basically a gallon hefty bag of washers. $90,000. I thought they were going to say $1,000. I'd be shocked. It was $90,000 for a bag of washers that you could probably buy. I'm guessing, based on what I know, you could probably buy that bag at Home Depot for $30. That's my guess. They charge $90,000. Jeez, I wonder where all our money's going. Unbelievable. Unfreaking believable. All right, folks, we're going to run the interview with Lee Richardson, which you will find fascinating, because I found fascinating. I love talking to this woman. She said, I got a great smile. And I even told her at the end of the interview, she has great teeth, and she does. So I tell you what, if you want to call in, the interview's about 30 minutes long. We're going to do this. And then you can call in afterwards. I have some UFO news tonight. We usually don't have news, like a lot of talking about breaking news. Well, it's not breaking news, but we do have some news that I'm going to talk about on the backside here. So let's do this. I'm going to there's a 12 seconds of bumper, and you get to look at Alex K's really fabulous graphics. And then we're going to see Lee Richardson. Here goes. Joining us from her office at the Brain Performance Center in Dallas, which she started, Lee Richardson, PhD. Lee, how are you?
I'm well, thank you.
Okay, so first off, how'd you end up starting the Brain Performance Center?
Well, I used to be in human performance, human resources, and I have two boys, and one got hit by a car, and we started to experience some difficulty, so I switched to the brain performance world. Worked for a neurologist for a few years as a board-certified neurotherapist, and then in 2009, I started the Brain Performance Center, and in 2022, from that emerged the Brain Performance Institute.
And what are the differences?
Well, at the Brain Performance Center, we work with individuals, ADHD, autism, depression, anxiety, and at the Brain Performance Institute, we work collectively. We work with organizations to create psychological safety, create more of a neurodivergent strategy within the organizations.
Okay. So, all right. What exactly is neurotherapy? Could you explain that?
And neurotherapy includes several different things, but it's a way to train the brain to get into a regulated state. And another term for neurotherapy is neurofeedback. And now we've got neuromodulation and neurostimulation, but it's all of that. And then we use coaching and counseling too. So you come at it from both a technical and a human standpoint to create the change, the behavioral changes in the brain and in the person's actions.
Okay, so I have a question here. Now, you said in your biography that you ended up in the emergency room a couple of times for brain-related injuries, correct?
I have. I've been in ICU twice.
Yeah. All right, so here's my question. I know that there's people who have been in accidents where the vast majority of their brain is basically, gone, and yet they still function, right? They still seem to be okay. Can people train themselves to bypass parts of the brain? Can you do that with neurotherapy?
Well, people can create neuroplasticity in the brain, and neuroplasticity is the brain's ability to change.
Uh-huh.
And we can all do that. The last couple of months I was doing my PhD, I decided I'm not going to use my right hand for my mouse anymore. I'm going to use my left hand. And that was a lot harder than I thought it would be. But that changed the way the brain, that the hand-eye coordination, the brain had to learn how to do new things. And that's how you create neuroplasticity.
Do you mind to ask, how long did that take you to learn that?
Well, I did it for a couple of months. But, you create neuroplasticity. If you love to cook, is there a cuisine that you've never cooked? I love Thai food. I've never cooked Thai food. Cook some Thai food, instead of brushing your teeth with your right hand, brush your teeth with your left hand.
Well, that's interesting. All right. Okay. So, all right. Before we get into the thing about the food thing, which really, that's the primary reason I wanted to have you on here. And also because I have been going on, and this is entirely anecdotal. I do not pretend to be an expert like you. I've been going on for quite a while about the fact that there's essentially, from what I can notice, there's an epidemic of loneliness in America. There's way, way too many people who are lonely, and I think it has an effect on just a whole bunch of stuff. So, first of all, am I right about that?
You are absolutely correct. In May 2023, the U.S. Surgeon General declared loneliness a state of urgency. And I believe the figure was one out of two people are lonely. And when we're lonely, we disconnect, we disassociate, we shut down. It's not good for the brain. It's not good for the body. It's not good for anything.
Okay, but is it a chicken and the egg thing, in the sense that are we lonely because we've disconnected, or do we disconnect because we're lonely?
Well, you know, the chicken and the egg, that comes into play with a lot of things. And I think that what I read the Surgeon General's report, and I think that what it was more focused on was, as a result of being in isolation, and that isolation, there was a cause for that. The COVID was the cause, and we were put into isolation. And for honestly, I had a lot of clients that they were so happy that they didn't have to go into work, that they could work from home. And for some people, that really gave them a sense of comfort. But then, I mean, during that time, I couldn't go to the gym. I couldn't go to church. I couldn't go to the Starbucks and sit down and have a cup of coffee. And that creates a feeling of being disconnected. You know, I can't tell you how many clients I haven't said, you're still grieving for before. And they're like, I want my normal back. And normal's gone. We've all got to create a new normal.
So it affected people two completely different ways, correct?
It did. I think for some of us, it was comforting. It was reassuring. But it kept us within the world that we wanted to stay. And at some point, you realize that, you know, I am lonely. I saw a statistic that said there are people that haven't talked to a human being for it was more than a few days.
Yeah, I see that too.
And how can you not talk to a human being? We don't have to. I mean, you know, anytime I get in the car and I'm going to figure out where I go, you know, what do? I pick up my phone and I put that address in, and it's so easy to exist within ourselves and to become so insular. And I think it is easy. And we all like to take the easy.
Well, the thing about being lonely is that, I mean, there's an old sketch from Saturday Night Live, you know, where they did an app, and the idea is like, the app's called Go Outside. And the idea is, you want to meet people, go outside. So, but the thing is for a lot of people, it's not that easy. I mean, if you're lonely, if you haven't talked to somebody for 5 days, there's a good possibility because you have nobody to talk to. So how do you, in some ways it's a really simple problem and solution. And in some way, other ways for other people, it's unbelievably hard. What do you do? I mean,
it is unbelievably hard. And I saw a statistic for the, you know, the Gen Zs, that their lack of friendship. And it is, and I found the older we get, the harder it is to make new friends. And you've got to get involved. You've got to find something that you believe in. Or for me, you know, the animals, that always works. And you've got to have a sense of community. And even if you don't have to be the loudest speaking person in that community, you can sit on the sidelines. You can hang back a little bit, but you can participate. And as a result of participation, you can feel included, and you can feel that you have a community to belong to. And without a sense of community, you do feel lonely. I mean, and it comes down to a sense of purpose. We all have to have a reason to get up every day.
Yeah. But you just touched on this, and that is about young people and Gen Z and their goddamn phones. And, of course, I'm an old guy now, and I'm going off of the people that getting on my lawn. But I do have to tell you, without going into too much detail, I was one of the developers of social media, and I have to admit I regret my involvement. I think it's done way more harm than good. I really do. And what's your take on that? I mean, we have a whole generation of, well, I'll call them kids now, who basically are like completely glued to their phones and they don't actually talk to real people. And I think it's disgusting.
Really, well, honest. I think social media has it's created a comparative society. And when you compare, you got a winner and a loser. And I don't like that.
Yeah, very true. And that's you bet very succinctly too. I never thought of it in that way, but you're right. Everyone gets online and they're comparing their lives to everybody else's lives. And, you know, and like, well, you know, most people are just dusting it up. I don't know. This is a part where I ditch. But I think these kids need to get out. That's what I think. You know, I don't know. It's like, whatever. Okay, enough about me. All right. So the reason I wanted you on here is because about the fact, so now your premise, and I don't totally buy this. Now, I have to tell you something too, Lee. Like, I've done 108 shows here. My wife's never watched any of them. But when I told her you were coming on, she said she might watch this one because she feels really strong. She's really into diet, and she totally agrees with your premise about the fact that a lot of people are having emotional and mental issues because their diet's so bad. Now, first of all, nobody cooks. That seems to be a thing. How did we lose that?
We live in a world that's so fast and so furious, and we want instant gratification, and we can get it. I mean, I saw on a news clip now that, you know, there's so many services where you can have organically homemade meals delivered to your home. And if you sign up, it's just on a subscription basis. It's really not outrageously expensive for those that only cook two or three times a week, where you'll buy all this stuff and you end up, you don't use it. And so, you know, it has a lot of different views, but I think that we want all are stretching ourselves too thin. We work, you know, the motto for the last couple of years has been, well, work hard, play hard. Well, what about some me time? What about some calm time? And I think that we push ourselves so hard that by the time we do have me time and calm time, we just want things easy. And, you know, it's easy to get, DoorDash. You don't even have to plan ahead. And Uber Eats, and not that one is any better than the other. I don't use either of them.
Yeah.
But it is so easy. You don't have to cook.
Well, so what do you know, or have you folks isolated what it is in particular in fast food and processed food that's maybe screwing our brains up?
Well, you know, processed, I have a rule. If I can't pronounce what's on the back of the wrapper, I don't eat it. And you know, it's not real complex, but if you've ever looked at the back of a can or a wrapper, and I can't even say those words. It's synthetic chemicals. And those are not made to be digested. Your gut is your second brain. And if you're not taking care of your gut, then it is going to be, the body keeps score of everything that's going on in the brain. And that's a great book for our listeners.
Yeah.
And when the brain is out of whack, the body's out of whack, and vice versa. And nutrition and sleep, those are the two most fundamental things that you can do to take care of your brain.
So why aren't people getting enough sleep?
Lifestyle choices, going back to that good old social media. And, you know, one of the first questions I'll ask a client is, where does your phone sleep? And if the answer is, well, you know, I use it as an alarm, so it needs to be right next to my bed so that when I can hear that alarm, I can get up. Well, you can stick it in the room across the hall and turn the volume up and still hear it. And I think that we've gotten to where when we all work from home and we had such flexibility in our schedule that we got away from the number one remedy for insomnia is cognitive behavioral therapy. And all that is setting a sleep schedule. What's your routine before you go to sleep? How do you tell your brain, okay, it's time to wind down? And many people don't do that. So there's blue light that comes out of a video or computer or phone screen, and that kind of jazzes the brain up. And I think the best thing that people can do for their sleep is, you know, 2 hours before you plan on going to bed, go put your phone on the charger. Give it a kiss goodnight. Leave it alone and start to wind the brain down.
I don't understand this, Lee. I'm a computer programmer, but I have no trouble ignoring my phone for like hours at a time. I mean, and it's because like probably what you're talking about, that we have so many distractions in our lives. I don't want to be distracted by this thing, you know? And I don't know, my friends bitch about the fact they can't get a hold of me. I don't care. I don't. I like my quiet, but I'm talking about me again, and we shouldn't be talking about me. I have to tell you, though, and, you know, if you want, forgive me if you take offense to this. So, my wife has a lot of female friends, and they're all bitching about the fact they can't sleep. And then we want to go to lunch or brunch on Sunday at 7 o'clock in the morning. And I'm saying, have you ever actually tried it? Just try laying in bed and doing nothing. Have you ever tried it?
try a little mindfulness when you're laying in bed, or, you know, a little gratitude. What are three things that I'm grateful for? Try to turn your, instead of, I can't sleep, I'm wired up, I need to get up, I'm stop. And try a little mindfulness. What are you grateful for? What brings you joy? I love visualization. Close your eyes. Go to your happy place.
All right. Have you figured out why some people are better at that than others?
Well, some people are better. Some people are, as someone just said, they don't want distractions. They want that focus. And I think that when you're self-aware and you recognize that adds value to you on some level, it's easier for you to do. And when that brain is constantly spinning and sped up, it's harder. You know, that's just, and I've had many people say, that's just the way I roll. I roll at 110 miles an hour, and that's what makes me successful. And they may think that, but research shows that the brain has, you know, it's amazing to me when you calm the brain down, life gets so much better.
Yeah, so this is the thing also, me bitching about those kids. All right, this is another problem I have. I have the feeling that because of these distractions of social media, we're actually getting less constructive thinking done as a society. I mean, if you look back, you know, 70 years, the 1950s, you had a bunch of scientists are putting stuff together on quantum physics and all sorts of stuff, and there was a lot of stuff happening in the world. I'm starting to wonder if we have less, even though we have more people now, we have less of that type of thought because everyone's so goddamn distracted. Do you think there's something to that?
Well, you know, research supports what you say. If you look at the, you know, the 30-second commercial we used to practice, the elevator speech?
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, that's an 8-second speech now.
Uh-huh.
And research shows that our focus time has cut down dramatically. And research attributes some of that to technology because we're training our brain. We can get an answer. I mean, I can remember having to go get an encyclopedia.
Oh, yeah.
And pick it up. Now, I mean, I just, you know, now I need a research study. I'll just pull up my phone and I can have it within 3 minutes. And we're retraining our brain that, well, we, you know, that's all it takes. You know?
Oh, Leah, I got to tell you the story. I had an 18-year-old programmer working for me years ago, and we went to lunch. And he says, so let me get this straight. When you were in school, there's no internet. So you, and what did you do? I said, we went to the library. And he says, but that's so lame. Yeah, right.
Well, when it was the only choice you had, it was
It was the only thing we had. That's absolutely correct. Okay. So the other thing I want to address here is okay. So our diets are affecting our mental state, but this is another obvious thing. They're also, have you done any work on how obesity is affecting our mental state too? Are those, is that like a cause and effect thing, or are they both interrelated, or how does that work?
Well, you know, I'm going to kind of go back to something I said earlier. The body keeps score of everything that's going on in the brain. And when we keep our brain in a hyper-aroused state, that keeps our body in a hyper-aroused state. You know, I saw a study that when people get lonely, they turn to food. Food is very comforting. And it was amazing what the study showed, that certain parts of the brain would light up when they would see a picture of food, and the brain responded more to the sweets than it did to the savory, to the salty. And I'm sure other people's brain is different, but it is what we feel like we need, and it makes us feel good, and it makes us feel comfortable. And I think that they've, in the study, it linked it to your BMI, your body mass index. And what's surprising to me, when I first started doing this, and I don't want to date myself, but more people could tell me their BMI than they could tell me, it, you know, well, that's great. That's great to know. How's your brain working? So different things are interesting to different people.
I just thought of this. Is there any chance here that we're not getting enough sexual gratification? I mean, you're right. Food is a pleasure thing, and you know, and obviously sex is a pleasure thing. And is that part of this problem too?
When you think about it, sex takes energy, and if you're so tired and you're so fatigued, and because I've heard that in my practice, I just don't have the energy.
Uh-huh.
And when you don't have the energy, you lose the motivation and you lose the desire. So that's an interesting question.
I never thought about this, though. It takes way less energy to eat than it does to screw. It does. It's eating.
Yeah, well, there's no denying that.
All right. You actually sent out a thing here. I read recently about the fact that the study that said that people, and this has been my anecdotal observation too, that people who are engaged in a religious activity seem to be way more mentally stable than people that aren't.
That has been proven study after study after study. And it's so interesting right now because, you know, people actually going to a church or a synagogue or a mosque, those numbers are declining. But the research still supports those that do are happier. And I think I've thought about that. And I think those that actively stay connected with a religion, whatever that religion is. And, you know, if you believe, you have faith. And I think there's a big difference between hope and faith. And I think those that are actively belonging and engaging have faith.
Well, the other thing is, and you're talking about loneliness, people who are involved in religious activities generally, I don't mean a pun here, they congregate. They get together with each other, you know? I just lost my train of thought. Sorry. You know, I'm 68 years old. This happens. I have often thought that in the United States, the majority of people go to church, not necessarily to worship, but to be around other like-minded people. I mean, is there any study that's actually talked about this, or, you know?
Oh, I'm absolutely sure there is, because it's social connectivity.
Yeah.
And I've seen a study where they talked about when people pray with a community, it's much stronger than praying by yourself. And music, being part of singing in a church, is more gratifying than singing by yourself in the bathtub.
Yeah. Yeah, totally agree with you. And the thing is, I am not particularly organized religion type person, but I have observed that all my friends who seem to be more well adjusted than people that like me, who are just basically nuts. I do. And here's another question I want to ask you too. In your studies, so now I do a lot of stuff on the show on paranormal stuff. Have you? What do you think about the concept of the soul? Do you think that that's an actual brain construct, or do you think it's something else, or doesn't exist, or what's your feelings on that? Or do you have have you done any research? Or
I haven't done any research, but I do believe in the soul. And during COVID, I decided I was going to paint, and I've never painted before in my life. And I painted my heart and my soul. And it, of course, it was very abstract, clear as a bell to me. I could see it.
Is that one of your paintings behind you there?
No, I'm not quite that talented.
Okay,
but
well,
I do, as you can see, I do like contemporary. But I do believe in the soul, and I believe the soul is part of us that lives on. And I think we're nothing but energy. We're nothing but frequencies.
Yeah.
And I think the soul, it has a certain, I think that's that higher level frequency.
Well,
that
I've had
on.
Several people on the show who talk about near-death experiences. And the amazing, I don't know, have you studied that? Have you studied those things?
Not in depth, no.
You know, the amazing thing about it is that although people have a hard time putting in words what they experience, it appears all those experiences are generally the same. That's the thing about the thing that's really unusual about it. It's hard to believe that people are just making it up, because why would the stories match? I don't know. That's, you know, I'm just talking now. That's what I do. I'm a talk show host, you know.
Absolutely, and you do it really well.
Well, thank you. Thank you. Well, you know your job too very well. I appreciate that too. All right. The other thing I wanted to ask you about is you said in some of your stuff I've read about training the brain on a conscious level. Can you train your brain on a subconscious level, or what's the ramifications of that?
So, and that's what we at the Brain Performance Center, we do is we train the brain on a subconscious level by creating change of how the brain's wiring and firing, getting that autonomic nervous system back in balance.
Uh-huh.
And when you get balance between the body and the brain and the intracellular communications, then the subconscious level can start to let go. Did you know, and this is a true fact, every minute your brain is capable of taking in something like 11 million bits of data. And research says that you can hold between 40 and 126 bits of data on the conscious level. And I believe it's 40, but it doesn't matter. We don't have to do the math. Where all the rest of it goes is to the subconscious. And that is where trauma lives. That's where disappointment lives. And the way that the brain processes information is it turns it into a story. It writes a story. Now, here's the kicker. The brain doesn't have to have accurate information. You know, oh, I'm thinking through this. I've got to think through this. I've got to get this out of my head. And, okay, well, what happened? This happened. Did it really? That's a question. So, and a lot of that is the subconscious. And with talk therapy, with coaching, that's how you create change more on a conscious level. But I believe for things like trauma, emotional trauma, you've got to really get the brain and the body in communication, get that autonomic nervous system balanced so that that you can let go. I mean, once you start to let go of the negativity, it just, you know, it's just not that important anymore.
So, Lee, what's intuition? Is it real? What is intuition? Is it real?
It is to me. It's very it's very real. And it's, you know, in my dissertation, I interviewed several people from the military. The dissertation was on the lived experience of leaders in crisis decision making. And I heard it called the sixth sense. I mean, I heard it called many different things. But intuition is real. And I think it comes from situational awareness. And that's not that fancy. You know, I can remember when I learned how to drive and I would always get lost. And my mom would say, well, were you looking for the landmarks? Was there a 7-Eleven on the corner? And no. And once I started, you know, that's situational awareness. It's walking in, being able to read a room. And part of that has to come from self-awareness.
Lee, my father was born in 1904. So he had me when he was 52. He was very old. And he got his driver's license in the 1920s. I don't know if you know this, but I can't remember when until about 1940, you didn't have to take a test to get a driver's license. So that you just got one. You went down to the corner and they gave you one, right? But have you ever stopped and thought about this? And that is, so we had a whole generation of people that learned how to drive on their own. And then their kids got up, you know, grew up. And even if they didn't necessarily see anybody drive, it seemed like they kind of knew how to do it. Do you know what I mean? And is there, is there anything possible in the genetic transfer of information, or is that just something that's in the air? How the hell does that work?
Well, the way brain processes information makes a difference, you know, how your visual processing is. And some people are very good at their visual processing and some aren't. But I do think, too, some of it is in the air. When you look at different languages and you look at the low content and high content communications, and that real high content, you know, you just got to be able to snip it out of the air. And the United States is not that good at it.
Yeah. Well, why is that?
Well, I don't know if it's because we're a newer community, and we tend to be very, I mean, we pride ourselves on productivity, and we streamline everything, and our level of efficiency, and the key performance indicators that we set for ourselves. We'll tell you very clearly what we expect you to do.
Yeah. Yeah. Interesting. You're a fascinating woman.
Oh, thank you.
And you also, if you don't mind my saying so, you have great teeth.
Well, thank you.
You're welcome. All right. So let's leave it with this. So, all right. If I'm addicted to food, what do I do?
You know, addiction is a brain disease, and I don't care if it's food, it's sex, it's drugs, it's alcohol, whatever. Anytime you start doing something and you really like it, that brain starts kicking out dopamine. And dopamine is a really feel-good neurotransmitter, and that brain gets confused. It goes from, you know, that's good, I like that. It goes, I like that, I want that, I want more of that, I need more of that. So whatever your addiction is, from the very beginning, put some balance in there and put some structure in there. And, you know, it's hard because when you turn 1 year old, 15 years old, what do you get? You get cake, you get ice cream. We're conditioned that rewarding our behavior, rewarding ourselves with food is a good thing. And I think that it's a lifestyle choice. I encourage people to really stop and look at their lifestyle choices. And what are you eating? And how much of it are you eating? And if you can just stop and think about, how could I cut back? Because it's self-regulation, and we all have to self-regulate. And there's nothing wrong with getting a little bit of help to help you with that either.
Yeah, and that's what the Brain Performance Center does, right?
Absolutely.
Yeah. All right, one more question regarding that addiction thing, the dopamine that you're just talking about. Are young people actually addicted to social media?
Oh, absolutely. When cell phones came out so strong, that was my biggest concern for addiction, was the cell phone. And it's pushed aside by social media.
And is it that people don't take that addiction seriously because it's not like a physical object or, you know, a physical consumption?
Well, I don't think that they see it, because I've had clients say, well, I don't do anything bad. You know, I'm not doing anything bad
right.
when I'm on social
That's
media.
That's exactly what I'm talking about, right. How could it be bad? I'm on my phone, right.
Until you realize that you can no longer pay attention, that you're not taking care of what you need to be taking care of during the day. You're not taking care of business. You're not talking to your spouse. You're too, you know, and your relationships all of a sudden, they're not going so well. You know, it's that long-term effect that we don't see right away, and we like it. And, oh, I like it. I want it. I need it. And so when you feel that way, stop and ask yourself, you know, do you need your job? Do you need your family?
Lee, we're going to put a link up on our blog to your book. It's called Turn Your Brain On and Get Your Game On. What's it basically about?
It's basically about just that. The first step of doing business with the Brain Performance Center or Institute is a consultation. And I would be talking with people and I would notice, you know, they'd be looking down. And I would say, you know, I sense some anxiety. Oh, no, I'm not. Or I sense some anxiety. I'm not anxious. And I'm like, it's okay to not be okay. And I wrote the book to educate that all of that is what's going on in your brain. And you need to activate that brain. You need to turn your brain on to get your game on.
Are people looking down because they're so used to being on their phones? Is that part of it?
I don't know, because I've been doing this for a long time, and they were looking down back then. But
well, you're only 35. How could you be doing that long?
I started when I was 12.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, so did I. No, but is that related to it? Are people looking down?
I think it is now. And I think that people, because I noticed, I just came back from a conference, and I noticed how many people were looking down. And I'm not saying that they weren't listening, that they weren't, you know, processing what they were seeing and hearing on an auditory basis.
Yeah.
But I was amazed at how many people were looking down.
Yeah. So am I just, curmudgeonly old bastard that life changes, but sometimes not always for the better. I don't know.
I second that emotion.
Yeah. I don't know what to say. Oh, well. You'll come back, I hope.
I would love to.
That's great. That's terrific. Thanks, Lee. I really appreciate you joining us today. It's been
a real
pleasure.
Well, thank you. And I hope your wife listened to the show.
Yeah, I do too. Thank you.
Thank you so much.
Yeah, you take care. We'll see you.
Bye-bye.
That's Lee Richardson. She's the founder of the Brain Performance Center in Dallas. And I'm just sitting there watching this, and I thought, you know, I'm just struck by her positivity. I don't know. Some people just really strike me that way. I mean, she's a very positive person. Seems like I enjoyed talking with her. I hope you enjoyed that. Yeah. So we have a sponsor on this show, Caught News. Jeff Meyer is the CEO and publisher of Caught News. He was on last night. But here's the front page of Caught News in real time. And this actually updated since we started. So I'm not familiar with the headlines that are going on here. So the thing is, if you're a news junkie, you can't do any better than this. This is a news aggregator. They do a few stories on their own. But as a general rule, all this news is aggregated from other sources. 75 sources to be exact. The servers go out once every 3 hours and scour their sources. They have a predefined list, and find new articles and then bring them into the fold. And then on the front page here, they're chronologically ordered, not by source, or just by whatever the date is, whatever time they were posted. And and this is basically a one-page website. Yeah, there's other pages here you can see in the menu. But the whole thing's on the front page, and it all updates every 3 hours. The photos are from the articles themselves, and the headlines are not rewritten. Those are from the articles too. And if you click through the headline to go to the article, you go directly there. There's no interstitial page, no ad, none of that crap. So, and this is entirely free. Not only is it free, you don't have to register to see this. You just go to conk.com. That's conk.com. If you're a news junkie, you can't do better than this. So, like I said, they go out every 3 hours. You look at this at 10 a.m., come back at 3 o'clock, 5 hours later, most of it is different. And the stuff that was previously there is pushed down to the bottom of the page. So you can start all over again. I mean, you can spend 2-3 hours plowing through this, just this one single page and all the stuff on here. So it's a fantastic resource. I use it all the time. And you try this, you'll like it too. It's at conk.com, conk.com. It's free and it's boss. It is. All right. So this is part three. You want to call me up? You can call me at, let me put the call number back up. I wanted to get it off of our face there. What did I just find my own? I screwed this up. Okay. That's fine. Whatever. I'm the master control, man. That's me. That's what I'm doing. So this is part three where we talk about all the weird stuff. And so what I got weird stuff here, I don't know if you saw this. This was in the news today. But once again, it's one of those things that kind of filters through the cracks. Dubai got more rain in the last 24 hours than they usually get in 2 years. They got 2 years worth of rain in one day. Matter of fact, it's the biggest storm there in 75 years. You have to understand, Dubai and the United Arab Emirates is one of the driest places on earth. And they got all this rain, and it completely flooded the country. I mean, I saw a video from the airport. I didn't know this. The Dubai airport's the second busiest airport in the world. I wasn't aware of that. I know that's probably because of the Emirates Airlines, but apparently it is. And so they're showing pictures of the airport, and there's water. The planes are plowing through water. There's water everywhere. And the roads were flooded. I mean, it was just unbelievable. No, it's not climate change. It isn't. It may be global warming. You know, I mean, I said, you know, there's a difference here. Global warming is real. Climate change, in the sense that humans are affecting the climate, is not real. That's not real. But you get more energy in the atmosphere, you're going to get more stuff going on. So as the scientists who have appeared on this show have said, the world's been warming up for the past 300 years. But I do want to point out that the first half of that, there was no industrialization on the planet. So you can talk about humans affecting it all you're on. You're wrong. They aren't. And I get people posted on, you're mistaken. You know, no, I'm not. No, sorry. No, it's all a big grift. The United Nations, we had Patrick Moore on the show. 2 weeks later, the United Nations put it on their website. They say, we can solve climate change for $75 trillion. Oh, yeah, like you solved everything else? Yeah, right. Yeah, yeah. I don't know if you guys have ever seen or heard of the show Snowpiercer, which I think is on on Showtime. No, not on Snowtime. It's on Showtime. The show's called Snowpiercer, and it's about a train that's literally chasing the weather around the planet. But on that show, the premise is that the planet is going into an ice age because somebody tried to change the climate and completely screwed it up. You know, they've talked about dumping crystals out of airplanes, all sorts of crap. It's all bullshit. It's just complete, utter bullshit. And God knows if anybody tries it, there's a good possibility that'll happen, too. Well, you know, the unintended consequences might be huge. Anyway, so Dubai got a whole bunch of rain. Just want to point that out. Secondly, this is really interesting. Our friend Jazz Shaw, the UFO guy over at Salem Media, he wrote this article on Hot Air. He's the weekend editor of Hot Air. All these people from Hot Air, come on. And people from Red State, too. We had Jennifer Oliver O'Connell coming on. These are all Salem Media properties. So, you know, they're a conservative news service. So, you know, they own these websites. But Jazz wrote an article here on Hot Air about the fact. Now, this is really interesting. The latest, he says that there's a scientist who said that the latest variant of COVID that's crapped up, you know, supposedly in the wild might be proof of the, this is really the logic kind of hard to follow, but it might be proof of the fact that we are living in a computer simulation. There's been this theory that's going around for about the last 20 years that our entire reality is somebody else's computer game, you know? So no one's ever been able to prove this or even come close. But apparently, even he says, if you read his article, he said that it took him a couple weeks to actually process this and figure out what the guy was talking about. But there's a scientist who's saying, and apparently the deal is, okay, this is the problem. In evolution, you got evolution, you have random changes like the DNA, genetics of animals. And every once in a while, if one of those random changes is beneficial to the animal, it sticks. Right? That's the way evolution is supposed to work. Well, supposedly with this latest version of COVID, he said like almost all the variants of the genetic variants that have been thrown at this thing have all stuck. And he said, and the scientist that he's quoting in this article says that the only way that would happen is almost if like COVID was actually programmed to accept the variants. In other words, it knew about them ahead of time. And that's impossible. That can't happen. But he said, but apparently that's the way it kind of looks. So we're going to post an article of a link to this article of Jazz Shaw's on Hot Air. It's really fascinating. And there's a lot of implications for this. So finally, we got Christopher Mellon, who's one of the big guys. He's a former, all right, I want to make sure I can get this right. He's the former deputy Secretary of Defense for the United States, if I'm right. Not, he wasn't the secretary. He was a deputy to the Secretary of Defense, if I'm correct, if I got that correct, something like that. It's like, anyway, and also he's of the Mellon family, the Banyan family. So the guy doesn't need to work. I mean, he was born wealthy. So, and he's just decided to do this stuff to devote his life to science. And God knows he's done he's been a really good, upstanding guy about this. He's been one of the people on the real cutting edge of trying to get the government to basically say the ETs are here. You know, part one was admitting that the UFOs are real. Okay, fine. So, and you know, he won an article a couple of years ago, a big article that made. He said nobody in the government wants to say the A word, and the A word is aliens. Because yeah, if you've got UFOs, they're only from three possible places: either we're making them and we're not telling people, or Russia or China or another country in the United States is making them, which is unlikely because we have about the best technology on the planet here in the United States. Or the third thing is that they're from not from Earth. And if you look at those three scenarios, it's almost certainly number three. Now, I have said this before, and I think a lot of the stuff that the pilots are seeing, the Navy pilots have been seeing, I think that a lot of those things are actually ours. But we have them because of reverse engineered technology from crashed alien spacecraft. In other words, so we have them because of ET, because of UFOs. But I still think that a lot of them are ours. So we've actually re-engineered some of the stuff, and we're developing it. Now, people who know the military say you never do that. You never test them in front of military people. And I think that's one of the very reasons maybe they're doing it, even though supposedly that could be dangerous. But whatever. That's my theory. I'm sticking to it. Anyway, you know, Christopher Mellon is no one in the government wants to say the A word. And the problem is that these UFOs, or UAPs, what they're called now, are almost certainly not from Earth. So, okay, so if they're not from Earth, that means they're from somewhere else. So that means they're, quote-unquote, extraterrestrial, and that means extraterrestrials exist. But nobody in the government wants to connect those dots because they're afraid or whatever. Anyway, here's the deal. So Christopher Mellon wrote an article on The Debrief. That's at thedebrief.org. It's basically, it's a science website kind of like Defense Department people and defense contractors. We've got a call here. I'm going to take this. Hi. Hello. You're on the air.
Hey, it's me, Think. I wanted to jump in on this whole UFO thing that you were talking about. If it's okay. So,
are you driving?
I'm sorry. Is the audio really bad?
No. Really it's good enough. I was just curious. That's all. No, we can hear you.
Okay. Awesome. So I've been watching this television show called Three Body Problems. And
yeah.
I don't know if you've seen it, but it's an incredibly scientific show about aliens and the contact with us and aliens, if it were to ever happen. But they break it down very good. But there's a concept in that show called the Dark Forest. And what the concept is that the reason why aliens don't come out and say, hey, we're here, and talk to us, is because the whole universe is like a dark force. And if you come out and you say, I'm here, then the people or animals that want to attack you know your position now. So
yeah.
Then that would mean that they could easily find you and attack you and eat you or whatever they're going to do to you. So that's why aliens don't come out and say, hey, we're here. But at the same time, if you really think about this, if aliens were to come here, it would not be on a friendly level. Throughout history, human history, every time a discovery is made in terms of finding a new civilization, it never turned out good for that civilization. Just look at America.
Right.
Look at the Indians. They're not. This country was taken over from the Europeans. They came here and took it. But it's not just this country. It's every civilization is the same thing. So basically, if aliens were to come here, it's not on a Star Trek level where it's a friendly thing. They're trying to learn about us or any just to learn about us so that they can document and be friends with us. They're most likely going to come here for some sort of wealth or natural resource that they need from us. And if they've been studying us, it's to find our weaknesses so that they could easily take over. I hate to say it in that way, but it seems like that's more, it seems more accurate that that would be the outcome than aliens coming here and trying to be friends with us.
I've never seen the show. The show's supposed to be excellent. That's what I've heard. I've never seen it, but there's actually two different ways to look at this. That's one way to look at it. Here's another way, and that is if you have mastered science to the point that you're capable of interstellar travel on a practical level, that means you've also mastered an enormous amount of energy. You know how to process energy, and at that point, you have a society where that's no longer a problem anymore. And if you can process energy like that, that means you can actually process matter. And my point is, if that's the case, you now have a society that has no material needs. So at that point, the counter argument is you would not be coming here for resources because you don't need any. You know, at that point, you're just explorers. But I mean, I don't know what's true. I mean, the argument that you talked about that's in the show is very valid. I know that. I mean, but there's two different ways of looking at that. That's my point, you know. Now, we have Kathleen Martin coming on the show next week, and she says, like a lot of other people who supposedly know about this problem, she said that it's a mixed bag. Some of the aliens are benevolent and are coming here simply to explore, and some of them are coming to rape us, you know. That's what she says, you know. So I don't know. I mean, you know, you're not talking about one single monolithic civilization. You're talking about a whole bunch of them. So my guess is both of those things are probably true.
Yeah. It is possible that if the alien race is so advanced that they don't need anything from us. But I'm sorry. It's kind of hard for me to. I hope so. I hope that there is a life form out there that's so advanced that they want to just help us or just want to look at how we live. But I don't think so for some reason. I think that if they're so advanced, they already know all this. So why would they come here and study us? I would think
Go ahead. That's a good question. And here's a possible answer. Because I was talking to somebody, I can't remember who it was. A friend of mine says, you know, who watches the show, he says, well, Jim, why would you need... If you're coming here to abduct humans, why do you need to do, and he's being funny, but not really. He says, why do you need to do 5 million anal probes? After like a dozen of them, don't you know everything you want to know? And my first thought is, well, you're collecting DNA. And then I'm thinking, but the thing is, if you're that advanced situation civilization I was talking about, and you're collecting, you don't really need to collect DNA. Couldn't you just manufacture it? And then, but now I was talking to, I can't think, was it Bruce Rappanow who was on the show? I mentioned this to him, and he said, well, think about it this way. Maybe it's easier to just abduct humans and take their DNA than it is to manufacture it. And I thought, well, okay, that makes sense. You're going to do whatever is easier, you know, no matter who you are, you know. So, you know, I think that we're both right here. In other words, I think there's probably different civilizations coming here for different reasons, and you're right. Some of them are going to be malevolent, and some of them aren't.
Yeah, that's correct. It's like the Dark Forest theory. We don't know who is out there, but there's a lot of people out there. If there's aliens out there, they would know that there are other aliens out there, and that would mean that there are aliens that have good intentions and bad intentions. And for them to be known and say, hey, we're here, then that kind of opens like a Pandora's box of possibilities that might be extremely dangerous or good.
Go ahead.
I also, when I listened to your show yesterday, you were talking about travel, like space travel. And I like your theory on like using a high heat source and with a shield, force shield around you, and then you get to travel light speed. But in my opinion, from the knowledge that I know in physics and what I study, there's no way we're going to be able to travel light speed. However, there is another way. If you look at Einstein's theory of relativity, which is time and space is a fabric, right? It's a fabric. Yeah. That's basically how gravity works. Our planet is within a fabric of space. And so that the space, if you look at it as a fabric, it's pushing us into the planet, right? So if space is a fabric, instead of having to go really fast from one galaxy to another, all we have to really do is bend the fabric and bring it to us.
Oh, that was basically what I was talking about. Go ahead.
Oh, okay. Is that okay? Then yeah. So I was going to say okay. Then maybe I didn't understand you well. But it also would explain if flying saucers are real. If flying saucers are real, most of them are in a circle shape, right? That would that would explain why they're not in a dart shape like our cars, our boats, our rocket ships. That would explain why it's not in a propulsion system. Basically, a flying saucer is in a circle. You don't know which way it's going.
That's correct, right? You don't.
So basically, it's not going in one direction, really. It's probably doing something else. Yeah, it's probably doing something else to travel, which is a possibility of what I would think would be to bend the space and time to bring the space to them. I would think. I don't know, but that's
Everything I've heard says you're absolutely correct, that's the reason they're shaped that way. And also, you are right in the sense that, you know, we're calling it a propulsion system in the sense that, but it actually isn't. It's actually the opposite. It's not really pushing anything. It's actually drawing space toward it. You know, it's the opposite. But we call it a propulsion system just, you know, colloquially, just to kind of, you know, figure it out. But no, everything I've read says you're absolutely correct about that. So that's what's going on. So I probably wasn't very, very precise last night. But what I'm talking about, the same thing as you're talking about, is that bending the fabric of space to be able to basically pierce through it. We have to make certain we're talking about the same thing here. I mean, technically, that's not going faster than the speed of light, but that's the loophole people are talking about to be able to travel easily, you know?
That's right. That would be the loophole for us to travel from one galaxy to another within a lifetime. I mean, there might be a way for us to travel to other galaxies at a slower speed, but it'll be not in one lifetime. It'll be in multiple lifetimes. On the TV show, on that TV show, Three Body Problems, the aliens said that they're going to come to the Earth and take it over, but in 400 years. That's how long it's going to take them. And these aliens they don't have this thing where they lie. That's their downfall. They told the politicians of our planet, of the Earth, that they're going to come, and they told them the speed and everything that they'll be here in 400 years. And so the people of the planet planned in advance for these aliens that to come here within 400 years. But I don't think interstellar travel would be like that. I don't think so. I think most likely we would have to bend the space and time, like how you were saying, to bring it to us, and then we just cross over. Yeah.
Right. Now, this is really interesting. I don't know if you've heard this, but, and matter of fact, we'll ask Kathleen about this next week. There's been enormous rumors going around the military community in the United States that apparently something regarding this is going to happen in 2028. I don't know. You know, that might be bullshit. It may be, but a lot of people have talked about this, and there's a lot of people who say, no, our government actually isn't in touch with the ETs. And the biggest proof of that is a guy named Haim Eshed, who is the head of the space program for Israel, the state of Israel. I believe they do launch rockets, believe it or not. And he's also one of the most celebrated scientists in Israel. And he has gone on record saying, remember, you can look this on the Google, it's all over the place. He said, no, He said Israel, and he knows the United States is in touch with extraterrestrials. He says this. So he would know, and he's not crazy. I don't know, you know. So I don't know what's going on here, but, I mean, everyone's talking about 2028 is going to be a big deal for something, but no one knows what. I don't know.
How do you feel about, I don't know, do you know who Graham Norton is? Graham Norton?
Yeah, yeah, I do.
Okay, great. So do you think that aliens helped build the pyramids and those structures from the past, like, yeah, pyramids and ziggurats and stuff like that? Do you think that the aliens came way back in the past and helped humanity become what we are now? Graham Norton says the opposite.
Yeah, and that's my feeling, too. My personal feeling is maybe they did, but I don't think they built that shit. I don't think they did. I think we did that. You know, there's only one possible. I don't know if you've heard of a place called Pica Pinchu in Chile, which is different from all these other sites because it looks manufactured. It actually looks like it's artificial. That may be an exception, but other than that, no, I don't. I think the Egyptians, I think humans did all the stuff. I do. I don't think it's beyond us at all, you know, especially if you have 100,000 workers, you know, you can do it. So, no, I don't really. So I generally don't buy it.
Yeah, I want to agree with Graham Norton on this. The Bible, I'm so thankful that there was a Bible written. The Bible is basically the instructions on, and this is all my opinion, okay? I think that the Bible is basically a book to show you how to build a civilization. It's all in there. You just give, and it's all done for you. You give the Bible to different people and tell them to read it. Once they read it, they become docile, and automatically they become a good citizen, right? They become a good person. And once somebody is a good person, then you can control them. And I think that's the best thing that happened, like that book was written. It created an incredible organization of people to become the civilizations that we are today. Without that book, I don't think we would have civilization at the level that we do now. I think we would be chaotic without the book. We would be basically animals. You know, we would fight for food, for resources, and not know how to share them. A prime example of this was this. Yeah. So
no,
I'm
going to
skip that. I just wanted to say that so the Bible is an incredible thing, but I don't think it's accurate. So I rather believe scientifically that the Bible says that God created the planet 6,000 years before Christ. But scientists say that the planet itself, our planet only, is 6 billion years old.
Right.
6 billion. That's a long time. So within the 6 billion years, I would think that within the 6 billion years, multiple amounts of humanity has been on this planet and probably die off. And you were talking about this earlier, about the Dubai and global warming, whether it's man-made or not, you see it happening. In New York here, I'm in upstate New York. In upstate New York here, we're starting to get earthquakes here. It's becoming worse and worse. And most likely, I think we're on the threshold now of something happening, and it's going to wipe us off soon, too. Our society is going to be wiped off. And the ones that do survive is probably going to rebuild again, a new humanity, just
all
like
right.
it was in the past.
Let me ask you something, because this is really kind of a contentious thing. Everyone seems to agree there were civilizations well before, like, the current one. But do you think they have high technology? Some people are thinking that maybe there were humans back, you know, half a million years ago that actually had a technological civilization. Do you think that? I don't know what to think. What do you think?
Yeah, so I agree with Graham Norton on this one as well. Now, it depends on how you categorize technology. Like,
that's true.
Our current civilization is we use combustion engines, right? We use machinery to do things, to lift things. But what if in the past they didn't do that and they learned how to control the elements? They found a way to control the elements itself or manipulate the elements. That was their technology. They use sound to move things, for example, or they use sound to move objects or control the weather to do things like that. Maybe that was their technology. So I believe that they had a different level of technology than we do now. If quantum physics itself says that says that there's no real solid structure. Like we say this is a table because we call it a table. But if you get rid of the terminology, it really could be anything. I don't know how to explain this than that.
I know what you're talking about, right?
Yeah.
That's,
so
that's a common thing.
Yeah, that's right. So the way that they developed their technology was much different. And that would explain a lot of things. Well, it doesn't explain it completely, but it would make more sense that it would explain how they built these things, these structures that are these incredible structures that even we in our current society have problems with, like the pyramids. Like these are 100-ton stone objects that they move from a far location, hundreds of miles away, to build this, to build these pyramids. And Graham Norton also said that the Egyptians didn't build the pyramids; they basically moved into the pyramids. So they found these structures already made, and they moved into it. And
I've heard that too.
And I like his interpretation of the Sphinx. He said that the Sphinx at one time was a lion. So Egypt at one time, Egypt right now is a desert. But a long, long time ago, it was like an Amazon forest, right?
Right.
It was like an Amazon forest. And that would explain how they know that there's lions, because there's no lions in the desert, right? How did these people know what a lion looks like? So there, at one time, there were lions there, and whatever civilization was there, they idolized this animal, and so they built a structure of a lion to represent that animal and their god or something along those lines. And when they died off due to some apocalyptic event, and the Egyptians moved in, they saw the lion sculpture and it's like, this is an incredible animal, but let's cut off his head and put on a pharaoh's head to show that the pharaoh is as powerful as a lion.
Yeah.
Do you understand? Yeah.
No, and I do.
That's why he said, yeah. So basically, most of these structures were not made by the people that occupied them now. They were built by previous civilizations that we don't know about, that have been died off. And the way things are going right now, it looks like we are about to die off. And the ones of us that do end up surviving are going to be the next group. And they'll probably have a totally different technology as well, other than what we have. Yeah.
I think we have to save all the hot lemons.
What's
I'm
that?
Just joking.
I'm
sorry. I said I think we need to save all the hot women.
You
joke.
Have to
little
if
joke.
You want to. Yeah, you kind of have to.
Little joke thing. That's all.
Yeah.
Hey, you know.
Go ahead. I'm sorry.
No, you go ahead.
No, I was going to say, have you seen those little statues of women? How they found from ancient civilizations? They have these little statues of like these, I would think they're fat. They're like fat women with these huge breasts and like a really big butt. And that was considered hot woman for them. And they would idolize this. But over time, that changed to what we consider beautiful these days, which is a thin woman, right?
Even 300 years ago, the ideal of feminine form was fat. I mean, you know, because it showed you were wealthy. If you could eat that much, you obviously had wealth. So that was the considered that was only 200-300 years ago, you know. We're the first civilization basically that seems to value thin in terms of beauty. That's relatively recent.
That's right. Yeah, I also think that we're...
No, go ahead, please.
I was going to say that I think we're changing in terms of that belief. I think that we're starting to want bigger women now. In terms of the women, I don't, the men are different, but in terms of the women, I think we are wanting bigger women. I'm starting to see women.
No, I agree with you. If you look in culture, and especially you go on TikTok, yeah, I mean, this thing with the Kardashians really started something. It seems like right now the ideal female form is very large butts and very, very large breasts. I'm on, you know, I get on YouTube and you see these YouTube shorts, and the ideal female body seems to be women with enormous breasts. I mean, it's just like unbelievable to me. You know, but I mean, I know, I think you're totally right. I think it's changing. I totally agree with you.
Yeah. It used to be a skinny waist, but now I'm thinking the waist doesn't even matter now. It's just big breasts and big butt, just like those statues, like from back in the days.
Yeah, things change.
I don't understand women, why they do some of the things that they do. Like, they wear these high heel shoes, and I don't get that. And then there's these nails that they have, these super long nails, and they do all kinds of weird designs with them. Like, they put ornaments on them. And I look at,
Think, are you a straight man?
Yeah, I'm a straight man. I'm definitely.
Okay, all right. Well, then welcome to the club. Nobody understands women. Nobody understands them. Sense. No. I'm 68 years old, and it's like I'm still. No, I don't get it.
Yeah, like I've never dated a woman that because she had long nails. I've never looked at a woman.
But they think that's important.
And they find it important. That's right. And these women wear these high heels to be tall. And I've never wanted a woman that's tall, or, you know, or I just don't understand that. And the makeup thing, I don't get either. So, women kind of, they're weird creatures to me.
Welcome to the show, Think. Look, I tell you, you know, we've only done 100 shows here, but I'm not fooling anybody. I mean, this show's for guys. I mean, who am I kidding? You know, it just is, you know, so, and that's fine because we need something, you know,
knowing what I said, do you think women should be making, we should allow more women to make decisions? Because to me, these are bad decisions, wearing high heels. I mean, functionally wise, right? If you were being chased by something wearing high heels, you would not be able to run. Having long nails, I don't see, how do you wipe your butt, for example? How do you even eat? How do you do things, right?
I don't know. If you're asking me, your argument is very, very prescient. I think, you know, women, you know, want, decision parity with men, as you're saying, and yet a lot of this stuff is very, very silly. And I'll give you what I think is the perfect example, and that is the big wedding. What is the deal? People spend $50,000-$100,000 on one single day of their life, and it's so irrational, it's ridiculous. And yet women want this. I don't know any men that want big weddings. I used to be a DJ. I've DJed hundreds of weddings in my youth. I did hundreds of them. And it's like, I can tell you, it's like the big wedding is entirely a female thing. And in my mind, it's the biggest waste of money any couple can make. And yet it's very popular. You know, there are women that want to do this, you know, they'll spend 50 grand in one single day of their life. And that's nuts. I mean, you're talking about decision making. That's crazy, you know. But whatever. you know?
Yeah, I agree 100%. That 50 grand could go down to you could buy a house with it, for example, a car. You could do such things, such much better things than just waste it. That's
right.
Basically a waste, right?
It's
yeah,
right.
You have a
that's,
party.
That's right. That's my point. It is. It's a waste, you know? I feel in my, one of the I have to give my wife really credit. She didn't want that shit, and we didn't do it. And I have to really, really give her credit for that because she thought the same thing. It's a waste of money. And it is, you know? So, but the thing is millions of brides do it every year. And for what reason? And you know, you want a perfect example of the irrationality of what I think of straight women. And that's it. I think that's the epitome of it. But, you know, so, I mean, I'm sitting here, I'm bitching and there's probably, you know, somewhere women are never going to watch this again. And I guess that's fine. I mean, like I said, I'm not trying to, I mean, I know who the target audience is here. So whatever, you know, like, but I am totally with you. I don't quite, there's a lot of stuff I still don't understand. Hey.
I'm not saying all women are like that. I'm not saying all, there are smart women, but the fact that so many of them make these silly choices, it kind of makes me question, you know, a women's role in society, you know,
because
of these
things. You have to forgive me. I cut because a couple of weeks ago I cut you off, and I have to do it again because we have to end our show in 3 minutes. But I'm going to leave you with this, and that is I have a friend of mine who has this theory, and I think he might be right, and that is in like 20 to 25 years, he calls it the war of the sisterhood because, like you said, not all women are like that. Some of them actually really do really think very well, and he thinks there's going to be like an interscene sex war between the women who can think and the women who can't. And it's a very interesting thing. And I'm going to leave you with that. You call back again and we'll have another conversation. Okay. I like talking to you. I'm
all
glad
right,
you called.
Thanks for having me on.
We got to get off at 10 at midnight here at Central Time. And so I got to do this in 3 minutes. So I appreciate it. Thanks for calling. Really? Yeah. I'll talk to you. You call again.
Okay.
Thank you. Take care.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Yeah, that's Think. Interesting guy. Really interesting guy. I love it. I actually love it when he calls. But yeah, we our show can't go over 2 hours because of our distributors. And so we're coming up on 2 minutes here. So I'm going to end this. We're off. We don't do Fridays here regularly. We're going to do Monday through Thursday. But we're off next Monday because of studio upgrades. So we'll be back next Tuesday with Ed Morrissey. I want to thank Lee Richardson for joining us tonight. Great conversation, great woman. She's terrific. She's fantastic. Not like the women thinking are bitching about. It's terrible. Oh, my wife is going to watch this. Oh, she's going to be so mad. Yeah, see, we got 90. I don't know if you heard that. We had 90 seconds ago. So anyway, thanks for joining us, everybody. Really appreciate it. Good night, Uncle Donnie. Good night, Esperanza. And good night to you, wherever you are. We'll see you on Tuesday. Take care.